Welcome to Psych for Psychology, a Nystrom & Associates podcast. Our host, Brett Cushing, is a licensed marriage and family therapist at Nystrom. Each week, he talks about all things mental health and therapy with guests, and you get a chance to dive into specific psychology topics that help promote personal development and wellness. And now, your host, Brett.
Hello and welcome to another podcast of Psyched for Psychology. We are glad to have you here today, and today we're going to be talking about your childhood. it's something we realize people don't like to go to therapy because they're worried, oh man, I don't want to talk about my childhood. So Krista Overson is with me again today, and we're happy.
Hello.
Yeah, delighted to have you here as always, and for us to be together doing the podcast. So, you actually came up with this idea. I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good idea. Tell us why, you know, you thought of this topic. Mm-hmm.
Well, I always find it so interesting how therapists and therapy are portrayed kind of in movie and TV. I think there's a lot of stuff that is kind of true, you know, about it. And there's stuff that's like, it's not all therapy, right? So one of the things I think that is a common misconception about when you go to therapy for the first time is I think people assume like, I'm going to have to talk about my childhood. And almost like that's the whole point of therapy is just like analyzing your childhood. And there's a lot of implications to that because then we get into, you know, am I being asked to blame my parents? Am I being asked to basically say like my parents royally screwed me up, you know? So I thought it would be a good chance to just kind of clarify some stuff about that, about the childhood thing.
Yes, I think you're right. I think people have this aversion, and there's an aversion to talking about our childhood, and all of those aversions are understandable. We really have very good reasons why we don't want to go there.
Right, right.
And there's benefits to go
there.
So what do you think? Where do we want to talk first? Like benefits or aversions? Yeah. Where do you want to jump in?
Well, I guess I'll just share kind of what got me thinking about this. And in order to get there, I have to talk about hypnosis first, which is kind
all right.
of... So I don't know much about hypnosis.
Well, we did a podcast on it once.
Did we?
Yes, we
oh,
did.
Oh, you did? Oh,
we
my
did.
Gosh.
So people can go back and listen to that
Oh, I'm
one.
So glad you mentioned that.
Yes, super helpful. Actually, I found
nice.
It. I thought, well, hypnosis, that's kind of like
same,
fringe psychology. Come on.
Right.
I realized, well, you did a podcast on EMDR.
Which people often confuse with hypnosis.
Exactly.
Right?
So.
But I'm really glad you brought that up. I'm going to go back and listen to that one, too. So with hypnosis, it's basically, if we're oversimplifying, we're in a very highly impressionable state. So we're suggestible. It's like, you know, almost like a deep state of relaxation, I think. And so our mind is just in this different way of processing information. And so there's been studies. I got this information from the work of Bruce Lipton. He's a scientist that I've learned a bit about. But he talks about how children under the age of 7 in particular, their brainwaves are very similar to people who are in a state of hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what if we're going to kind of why that's relevant is kids are in a highly, we could say, a highly impressionable and suggestible
and
state.
We do say that about children, right?
Right. And because like they believe in things that most adults would, you know, like they're I guess sadly in a way gullible, you know, they can just be very, they'll believe you. So what's so fascinating about that is when you're a little kid, you're taking in so much information from the world around you, and it's being stored in a very different way than when you learn information as an adult. When you learn information as an adult, you're not in as a suggestible of a state. So you're kind of questioning, you're kind of like, I don't know about that. You're kind of logic brain, like wondering. And so, but when you're a kid, you're not really questioning. You're more just like downloading. So if you are in that state, the beliefs you take on as a kid matter. So that's kind of what
I
got
love
me thinking
how you
about
put
this.
That too. We're not questioning.
Mm-hmm.
We're just simply downloading. And
yes.
We, you know, I think of a computer.
Yep.
We're downloading something. It's just straight data. No critical thinking.
Yes.
It's just acquiring.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's why I think people, especially when we do trauma therapy, they have these beliefs, oftentimes of some culpability, that this was my fault, that this trauma happened.
Yep.
And it really goes right back to that very impressionable state. You know what it also reminds me of is... my daughter, we leased a horse for her in high school. And so she was able to go on horseback riding. I was nervous. I mean, here she's like 110 pounds dripping wet, and she's on this beast, you know,
it's like almost Teutons like, or
right.
whatever.
And I'm thinking, this horse could like squash her. And I was talking to the owner of the ranch and said, hey, I'm worried about my daughter. I mean,
yeah.
And she said, no, what you need to understand is that the horse, when they're real little and they're a colt, they see us mm-hmm. as huge.
Mm.
And they never really grow out of that. So
sure.
even though they are so much larger,
right.
they still see us in that much younger state. And I thought that's a good analogy for us with
yes.
being children. The beliefs we have, mm-hmm. we hold, mm-hmm. even as an adult. And the power that yep. there is over us because we are in that impressionable state.
Right.
It's not just impressionable then. It stays with us.
Exactly. Well, here's another piece of it. So we have the kid. We have a kid who is impressionable, you know, suggestible. They'll kind of believe a lot of what you tell them. And this really extends not just to age 7. I'm using age 7 kind of arbitrarily, but it extends even later. Because our brains aren't even fully developed till we're in our, mid-20s or something.
Right.
So the other piece that kids do, which is so fascinating, is they take everything personally, not because they are trying to, but because they are so survival minded because they're so defenseless. If you think about a human child, a human infant is, you know, the epitome of defenseless, right? Like
mm-hmm.
can't fight for themselves, can't survive. So that continues even as we're little kids, right? And so our caregivers are everything to us. So if something is going on with our caregivers, we inherently make it about us. We can't help it. So I tell people a lot about this when we're talking about childhood, right? It's like,
mm-hmm.
so if your parents are, you know, for example, fighting it with each other, the kid is like, oh my gosh, my survival. So they're making it about me, right? About what my needs and my terror, you know, and kids are so, so vulnerable. So basically that's a long-winded way of saying it's not just the beliefs we take on, but that we also personalize so much, like you were saying with trauma. So if something horrible happens, kids are automatically, they like default to it's about me. And that has a lot of implications, right?
It absolutely does. And I think of when someone is pregnant, my daughter-in-law is pregnant right now.
Oh,
so
yay, congratulations.
Very excited. Yeah,
yay.
We're learning and relearning all sorts of things when someone's pregnant
yep.
and the child and the effects of the child is it's on the pregnant woman too.
For sure.
And you talk about enmeshment in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
There's this symbiotic relationship where they are together, they are one. And then there's this physical birth that happens.
Yes.
And now they're separate, quote unquote. We
mm-hmm.
cut the cord and they're separate, and yet there is emotional, intellectual kind of attachment still.
Yes.
And it's not till junior high, high school that they're wanting more separation. But until that time, there is this kind of enmeshment, if you will, that
yes.
I am an extension of my parents.
There and it is. Yes.
We don't see that.
No.
Maybe as adults, we might think, well, that's crazy. I didn't think that. And yes, we did.
We totally did. We totally did. And yeah, people say that kids don't really conceive of themselves as being a separate entity from their parents for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things we take on from our family of origin or our family environment that we just have no idea we're taking on. It's like a sponge effect, right?
I like that, right?
Yeah, so we're learning about relationships. We're learning about how the world works. I remember an example I always use is, when you were a kid, like when it was raining outside, did you think it was raining all over the world? Like That's something
mm-hmm.
that I remember being a certain age and it was raining and I was like, oh, it's raining everywhere.
Right.
Because I didn't realize that it could just rain like in my city.
Totally.
So you
weren't narcissistic.
I know. Well, and that's the thing.
You were just a child.
Well, and I've used the word narcissistic when making this point, but I've kind of tried to get away from using that word just
right.
because it's a big word.
Like pejorative.
It's,
yeah.
Right. Because this, and that's why I want to clarify, this is not at all to be pejorative to little children.
Right.
It's just their worldview.
That's
right?
What it is to be
right.
a kid.
Right. So basically all that to say, it does matter. And I think that's what got me thinking about it. So then it's like, okay, well, what are the implications for this in therapy? Right. Like, so I think for me, when I'm first meeting with a new client or getting to know someone is I'm always listening for kind of like, what are the things that they are assuming about life or themselves
mm-hmm.
that are assumptions. right?
Good word, assumptions, right?
So, right. So those could be things like, and it can be really subtle. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it can be, of course you have, right? Is things like, things never go my way, you know, or that's life for you, you know, something, right. If something bad can happen, it will. You know,
one thing I hear from people, assumptions they have, especially when they've experienced traumatic things from their parents, is they refer to their mom or their dad as being really big.
Wow.
And I would be looking at this grown adult.
Yeah.
Almost sort of, even their whole posture would sort of cringe and curl up like a little child. Like my dad would get really big.
Right.
And so there's that experience that was very real as a kiddo.
Yep.
Still being experienced now as an adult.
Right. Exactly. And I think, so I'm kind of listening for the assumptions. I'm not necessarily pointing those out right away, but it's just helping me to understand kind of what are the beliefs this person has accumulated over a lifetime, right? And then if I, and then I always do a genogram, which is a fancy word for family tree. So I always draw that. And I, and again, people kind of might wonder like, well, what's the relevance? If you're an individual going to a therapist, what's the relevance of having a family genogram or a family tree, right? So I draw it on my whiteboard. Well, for me, it does kind of show, again, kind of intergenerational assumptions that get passed down. So assumptions from my parents, assumptions from my parents' parents, and on.
Right.
And usually I only go a few generations back, but it just kind of tells you like, what are the family beliefs that
are
passed down?
And there can be beliefs of all sorts of things. Like,
yes.
The boy is the prized one. It could be that it's the oldest is the one who gets the most attention. And isn't it interesting if we have siblings? Do you have siblings?
I do. I have an older sister and a younger sister.
Right.
Middle child.
So you kind of have these beliefs that, well, this one was favored or this one always got away with something. And then you see, and I remember talking to my oldest brother, Doug, once just about our family. And he's about 6.5 years older than me, and we were talking about our experiences with our parents.
Oh, fun.
And I said, yeah, Doug, you know, we grew up in two different homes because we had very different personalities from each other and very similar, and yet our experiences and even where our parents were in time and their developmental stages, parents was different, so...
Because you said 6 years between you. Yeah, that's huge.
I was almost like an only child with that difference.
Yep.
And so we have all these different perceptions and experiences, and with that come these beliefs.
Yes.
And with these assumptions, then we can extrapolate that. We can universalize that. So like if someone says, you know, my dad was always angry.
Yeah.
And then they see something on TV as a kid where men are angry.
Yeah.
And so,
so true.
Men are unsafe.
Yes.
And so it becomes this bigger belief and broader belief.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm an adult and I'm in your office.
Yep.
And I'm asking, why is it a big deal to talk about men?
Right. Right. Exactly. No, that's such a great point that you brought up too, because it's not just in our family of origin that we download these kind of beliefs, but it's from things like TV, you know, and movies. And again, I'm not trying to make anything right or wrong, but it is just so interesting kind of the assumptions that can come just even from television or from, you know, movies and now social media, right?
So as a kid, I think of Fred Flintstone.
Yes.
And I always thought, why is he so angry all the time?
Right?
I mean, the dude is just upset about something.
Dude is stressed out.
Totally a grump.
Yeah.
And yet I was kind of drawn to him. And then when I grew up, all the bad guys on TV never shaved. You know, they had that 5 o'clock shadow. And so that's how you always knew who the bad guy was. So I remember as a kid.
Isn't that something?
I would go around shopping with my mom or something. I'd see some guy who hadn't shaved and I thought, he's a bad guy.
See? That's fascinating. I'm so glad you remembered that, because those are the things where it's so subtle and you wouldn't have said, like, it's because we're talking about this that you remembered it, but in your day-to-day life, you're not thinking about that, right? Like, I'm guessing. Anyway.
I didn't go to bed thinking about it, but when I was at the grocery store and I saw a bad guy who hadn't shaved, kind of walking around my mom, I'm thinking danger.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So it's all those little subtle things. The good news, too, is when it comes to therapy, it's like I'm trying to get the full picture. I'm trying to get the family tree. You know, I'm trying to just kind of gather all the information about what is this individual really downloaded in their lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't even get into, like, traumatic events, you know? So that's just, like, baseline.
Right.
And then you're getting into things like family crises or medical events or trauma or abuse or all those different things. So really, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, wow, humans are so resilient, right? That's a whole other thing, right? Like, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Sounds like a good idea. Maybe a couple. But I think of something you also touched on, too, that I want to highlight. Some people hate going to doctors. And you had mentioned, like, why we don't like going to the hospital or why we don't like going to the doctor because we have experiences. I've had medical trauma in my life a bunch. And I remember once I had this procedure done. It was a cardiac catheterization. Novocaine didn't work. I was a mess.
No.
I passed out after hours.
And that sounds awful.
So I remember, and I was like in high school, and I was lived in Milwaukee. And so that's when I had this happen. It was really pretty traumatic for me.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I had to have another one done at the Mayo Clinic. And so we're coming all the way over to the Mayo Clinic here in Minneapolis. In Rochester. And I'm racked with pain. I think I was like on the verge of a panic attack.
Well, yeah.
Because I was going to have all this redone again the next day. And yet.
Oh, it was the next day you were supposed to have this redone?
No, not the next day, but I was in the hotel waiting to have the procedure.
You were
thinking, oh, no, the next day I got to do this all over again.
Still,
And yet, you know, that's just a little example. I'm sure there are people listening who have had bad experiences with hospitals. I'm not trying to, you know, highlight anything. I'm not trying to disparage doctors. I do hear women oftentimes say they've had invalidating experiences with doctors. And so if you grow up as a kid and you've had bad experiences, you might have had a traumatic experience.
Yep.
And then you might have had some sexual abuse. And then you have to go to a doctor's office and you might have to unclothe a bit. So
exactly.
A lot of times what we talk about here, too, is trying to, as we understand things on the podcast, that our thinking shifts in another way. That instead of looking at people and thinking, what's their problem? I mean, go to the hospital. Go to the doctor. What's your problem?
Why don't you just go?
Or it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. Or you need to calm down. And hopefully we can transition and see our minds transform away from what's her problem to I wonder what happened to her.
I love that. And I think that has implications, too, for the blame piece. Because, again, with the childhood, you know, when people think about, do I have to talk about my childhood? I think another thought that goes along with that is, do I have to be mad at my parents now? Right. So, because again, if I had a nickel for every time a client came in and said, I had, I'll say like, I don't think I say like, how was your childhood, but something they'll say like, I had a happy childhood, you know, and it's almost like a defense of like, they're kind of saying like, well, nothing happened to me, you know, in the past. So don't worry about that. You know, let's get that out of the way. And I even remember when I first started going to therapy, that was my stance too, because I felt protective of my parents and my family. And I kind of was like, I don't want to dig into something, you know, and
what would that mean? If you dug into something
about
your parents, what would that have felt like to you or what would that have meant?
Right. I think it would have been, well, what it ended up being for me was a shift in my paradigm, you know, because again, and I'm not, my parents know I go to therapy, like I've talked to them about it. So it's not a weird thing of like, I, you know, have this resentment against them, but I bring this up to say, it's not about disproving that you had a happy childhood at all. It's about seeing it as more not all good or all bad, right? Because people can come in and say, my childhood was all good, and then they're not letting themselves look at things that were painful that they might need to process, right? So my point is like, we all in a way had a happy childhood, and we all in a way had a terrifying childhood.
I love that. Right? Yeah, we call it dialectical thinking.
I was just going to say, everybody, go listen to the dialectical thing. Better thinking for a better life.
I love that. It goes the other way too, where if all I think of was the bad that happened to me and as little kids.
Yes.
We have these beliefs, and they're big beliefs that we carry with us, and we can extrapolate that, and then we forget there's positive, too. And so all we see is the negative. And sometimes then, because we have those beliefs, it's like a little filter
is
developed that yep. filters out all the positive and only negative
yes.
sort of is filtered through,
yep.
which is, we did another podcast on confirmation bias. I don't know
cool.
if you've heard that. And so that's kind of what happens is
yes.
like, I'm only going to let in the information that confirms my bias
yes.
towards
yes.
these beliefs. My childhood was all rosy or
yeah.
it was
yeah.
all awful.
Right. Well, and so then I think what happened was it kind of got into, I think what happens next is it gets into like, okay, were there things in my childhood or ways that my parents taught me or whatever that are no longer working for me?
Mm.
So that was another helpful thing is like, let's neutralize the blame. We're not blaming. I always tell people, I tell my clients, I promise you, my goal is not to have you blame your parents because they were doing their best based on what they went through. So it's all on the up and up here, right?
I love
and,
that.
And so, and some people, you know, blame their parents anyway, but that's a whole other thing. But I think if we can shift away from that kind of black and white thinking, like you were saying, and say like, okay, what were the things that were good that I took away
mm-hmm.
from the way I was raised? What are some things that I would do differently if I had the chance to, right? And a lot of it, honestly, Brett, comes back to self, your self-esteem, your self-concept. It's like this thing about, am I good enough? Am
mm-hmm.
I... you know, do I deserve a place in the world? Like, that's usually what's at the heart of this whole childhood conversation is what did you take on about yourself that's now not working for you anymore? Because it might be, I'm not feeling good enough.
Yeah. Right. And we feel also averse to doing this and we want to avoid talking about our childhood. Kind of what you're saying is, I feel like I'm betraying
yes,
my family.
Betraying, exactly.
Yeah, and,
yep.
and so I can't say, because there's this enmeshment, sort of like I'm
mm-hmm.
still one with them,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have this sort of closeness and uniqueness
yep.
That
yep.
I feel like if I'm saying anything bad about them, I'm saying something bad about myself, I'm saying
right.
something bad about them, and that goes against those rules that we
yes.
have in families that
yes.
they're not written down, but everybody understands them, and one of them can be.
Yeah.
You don't talk about your emotions. You don't talk about
yeah.
the family. You don't say anything bad about mom and dad. And all these rules that we
yeah.
feel like we're breaking.
Yep.
That as a kiddo, again, because
yeah.
we're so impressionable, oh, I absolutely cannot do this.
Yep.
So there's this idea that going to therapy, that's a real threat.
It flies in the face of the whole thing.
Right.
Yes. Are you familiar with the book? There's a book called Facing Shame. I think it's by Mason and Fossum, I want to say. It came out, I want to say, in maybe the 90s. So by today's standards, I mean, it feels outdated, although, you
yeah.
know, it's not.
Timeless truths.
Exactly, yes.
yes.
But they actually talk about, and maybe this can be another episode, they talk about the rules, the unspoken rules
mm-hmm.
of family systems. And one of them is a no-talk rule,
right.
where we don't talk about the problems that we're all experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So it is literally like, we don't talk about it. And so it's uncanny though, this list they come up with, that's like
mm-hmm.
how many of these, again, not to say like, oh, your family stinks, but just like, this is just what's passed down, almost
right.
like a story that gets passed down generations. The
mm-hmm.
same thing happens with beliefs. The same thing happens with behavior. It's so interesting.
I think what also happens for us as kids, just like the analogy with the horse, we
yes.
hold on to these beliefs
mm-hmm.
even into when we're bigger and,
yep. Yep.
and then like, one of my professors wrote in her book, Released from Shame,
yeah.
she said, no matter how much we grow up, when we go back home, we tend to grow down
yes.
again. And those beliefs become bigger. And
mm-hmm.
think about it this way. When we're kiddos, we are impressionable. We have those beliefs.
Yep.
And then because we have those beliefs, it's like, oh, man, if I stay in this system,
mm-hmm.
we don't know this cognitively, but it's like, if I stay here,
yeah.
I have to have some adaptive ways to survive. So
yep.
in other words, we develop these survival skills
yes.
in our home
yep.
to deal with these big, scary beliefs.
Yep.
So we use these skills, I call them survival skills, that work for us when we're in
they
our
work.
Family of origin.
Yes. So
but
true.
Now that I'm older, they don't work in other relationships.
Exactly.
And like you're saying, I want to pivot away from judging that,
yep.
thinking
yep.
it, you know, because that's just going to promote more shame, and just
right.
ask, okay, those skills, those behaviors
mm-hmm.
help me to survive. There's survival skills then that they don't work anymore. So I just have to learn new skills, and I don't have to beat myself up for this.
Right. Actually, you mentioned the word enmeshment. I'm wondering, would you like explain that a little bit? Because that's a huge word.
Yeah.
And a great word.
It is.
Yeah.
We want to make this clear. It's sort of like the way I describe it with my clients is like when you're folding your hands.
Yes.
You fold your hands together, and like if on your right hand, you got your fingers attached to it, and each finger is kind of like your thoughts, your feelings, your opinions, your reactions.
Oh, nice.
And if it's folded with another hand or another person, if one finger moves and there's a reaction by one person, that automatically affects the other person. So there's all sorts of closeness, but there's no sense of uniqueness until you pull the hands apart.
And
so
I love that.
What happens with an enmeshed relationship, it's a highly anxious kind of thing.
So true.
Because I'm always hypervigilant to the other person.
Yep.
And because I'm so enmeshed with them, I don't have my own sense of self.
Yes.
So, but it's so anxious that what we do is we overcompensate for that. And then it's like, oh, it pulls apart. And then you put your hands like stretched out as far as they can from each other.
Yes.
And that's what some people call, Murray Bone called, emotional cutoff. So like,
now you're too far apart.
But I've got all sorts of uniqueness.
Yeah.
I just have no closeness.
Yes.
And so, and we want to get out of enmeshment so that we can have closeness with somebody and I can have my hands facing each other, my fingers facing each other close, but not touching. So that there is uniqueness from the other and still closeness.
I love that. That is so, I'm actually going to use that. And one of my favorite things about doing what we do is learning these things. Cause I hadn't heard that analogy of the hands and it's such a good visual, you know? So I'm going to use that. Cause I've tried to use like Venn diagrams before, like two interlocking Venn diagrams that are almost like two overlapping circles.
Yeah.
But to represent each person, but the hands, when you clasp your hands together, that's such a great visual.
And it's scary as a kid, we grow up very enmeshed like this, like hands that are folded.
Yes.
And therapy feel like that's our survival skill too.
Yep.
Like I have to be this way.
Yep.
And I can't say anything negative.
Yep.
And so it's almost like you can feel your hands gripping tighter and tighter, even in therapy, when I got to talk about this stuff.
Yes.
I don't want to.
Yes.
Part of my survival skill, or what I've learned, like you said, is don't talk about these things.
Sure, exactly.
And I think also what can happen is people, I think, are so concerned and have some fears that I don't want to talk about my childhood because I've broken free from that. And I don't want what happened to me in my past to define me today. And I think that's what we want to communicate too, is that we're not suggesting you are your past.
Mm-hmm.
We want to say, yes, you're different. You're grown.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some things from your past
that
are still tethered to you. It's kind of like when we hear about the ball and chain, carrying the ball and chain. Like, we just want to break free from some of that so that there isn't that sort of influence on you anymore.
Right. Well, and actually that makes me think back to kind of that dialectical thinking, because if you cut off, if you say like, I'm totally past my past, it doesn't affect me anymore, you're leaving both the good and the quote unquote bad behind.
Right.
So it's hard to hang on to just the good parts if you're saying, no, that's all in the past, I'm not going to go there. Because then it's like, well, then there's some good stuff in there too. So don't throw it all out.
Right. And Brené Brown, who many people know about, talks about that too. We can't just numb the negative things of the past without numbing. We can't selectively numb. And so we end up kind of going almost like flatlined emotionally because we can't just selectively numb the past. And so that's another reason why we want to talk about childhood sometimes. It's not all the time, but sometimes it's really relevant because some of us have so effectively numbed the past that we're numbing the present as well.
Totally. One last thing I want to say about that clasped hands, nice demonstration you did about enmeshment, because it occurred to me that there's some families that grow up with the hands way far apart.
Yes.
So I think it's really common to have an enmeshed family, and there's a lot of like, if you grow up in a family where there's no connection or like low connection, then you might see therapy as like, why in the heck would I go talk to a stranger about this, that, or the other, right? And so again, that emotional closeness might not feel safe to you because Whereas one person might feel like this enmeshment and this way over closeness is the only thing that's safe or feels normal to me. Some people might be like, no, normal to me is I'm on my own. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
right.
I'm on my own. I don't need other people. But then, of course, then it's very lonely. Right? So even finding ways to practice
that. I'm glad
you
brought that up. That's such an excellent point.
Oh, thank you.
Because people, we come from all different backgrounds. And that's one that we do need to highlight.
Yep, totally.
What would you say to people who are listening and maybe they're thinking, I still don't want to go to therapy. I don't want to talk about my childhood.
Awesome.
What would you say?
I am so glad you said that because I would say, thank you for telling me. You know, if a client comes in and anyone listening who is maybe like toying around with going to therapy and you're not sure, I would say just be upfront with the therapist right away and say like, you know, I don't really want to talk about my childhood, you know, and I think the therapist would truly appreciate that because there are so many modalities. There's so many approaches to therapy. There's like solution focused where you just really focus on present problems and what am I going to do about it? You know, so there's a lot of different ways that therapists operate. And so what I would say to someone is, thank you so much for telling me that. And I would kind of just say like, you know, would it be helpful to talk more about, you know, that, like, and then I would just get clarification, like how do you want me to navigate this as your therapist? So I'm not kind of prying into areas that you don't want to go to, you know, and again, as the therapeutic relationship unfolds, maybe I will get more insight into why that's so painful for them, but I would never force someone to tell me something before they're ready. Ever.
Because that's a boundary. The client gets to set that boundary.
Yes, exactly.
The safest people in our lives are the ones that respect our boundaries, even if we don't like it.
Right.
Even if we disagree with it, we still respect it.
Yep.
So a good therapist is going to respect that boundary.
Exactly.
And people can know that, I'm going to be safe. Mm-hmm. I'd also say if people are having some hesitancy to and avoidance to that's okay, but try to encourage yourself just to say, hey, it makes sense that I don't want to talk about it.
Right?
Don't sort of judge yourself
for not wanting
to talk about it. Just notice that you have some aversion to it and say, yeah, probably makes sense.
Right, yeah. Well, Brett, this was so fun to talk about. I want to thank everybody for listening today. We referenced a couple of their podcasts that you can go back and listen to, such as Hypnosis. And then Brett had one recently about dialectical thinking, which I thought was super helpful. I'm not on that one, but it's still really good.
Hard to believe. Yeah.
I know. Well, and I'm not on a lot of the ones from way back, but now you can't get rid of me.
Yeah.
No. So anyways, thanks everybody. Listen with a friend, listen with someone you love and have a discussion. We will be back again soon with another episode on Psyched for Psychology.
Thank you as always for listening and please be sure to leave us a review. While this podcast can't be a replacement for therapy, we hope you enjoyed our discussion today and join us again next time. Nystrom & Associates is always available to those who are struggling. If you find yourself in need of support and help, please check us out at nystromcounseling.com.